Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by Markentum.
Welcome back to another excellent episode of Bridge the Gap podcast. I am Lucas McCurdy, the senior living fan, here today with my co-host, Joshua Crisp of Salinity. How are you doing, Josh?
Doing awesome. Glad to be here. Another great podcast episode in store.
Yeah, I am secretly really probably most excited about this one so far. I've interacted with Amanda on LinkedIn before, but to get to actually interact over video and audio, I'm super excited because I think that she's one of the most interesting people in senior living that's walking and alive today.
I would agree with that. So I had the awesome opportunity to meet Amanda. Amanda, I think it was at Argentum, maybe like a year or so ago. It feels like I've known you a lot longer than that, but we've had multiple kind of phone conversations and emails and constantly trying to pick your brain. But I want us to talk today about what you're involved in and what I would describe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I describe it as a passion project of yours in Connect the Ages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first of all, we're super excited. You're joining us all the way from Italy today. So literally, we were talking about it. We're bridging across oceans today in the Bridge the Gap podcast. So thanks for joining us. So tell us a little bit about your passion project and what all you're involved in.
Sure. And first, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate being in your top few lists to reach out to early. That means a lot. And especially both of you are so innovative, and those words coming from you are really, really important. So thank you so much. Right now I am in Italy. I'm in Sardinia, which some people might know, it's one of the world's five blue zones that have been identified. So there's a higher than normal likelihood that people here will live to be centenarians or live beyond, you know, normal life expectancy. So I was here in October and I'm back already. So the reason for that is when I came here, it was to help an organization with a pilot VR project, virtual reality project. But when I was here, I found what I'm really passionate about, which is, you know, how do we connect younger generations to the value of older generations? And they're just doing that naturally here. So, you know, I wanted to find out, why is that? How are they doing this? And how can we maybe, like, you know, bottle that up and share it with the world? So that's why I'm back so soon. So I am filming out here again in 2D, so regular film, so 4K, and then also in 360 degrees, so for virtual reality content, which the reason for that is I believe younger generations will be adopting VR. We saw them adopt AR really quickly with, like, Pokemon Go, right? And then there's probably, by the time this is aired, the Harry Potter AR out by the same company, and that'll be probably even bigger than Pokemon Go was. So I think AR and VR are really interesting tools, and that's why, just to get to younger people earlier.
Yeah, wow. Well, I mean, this is one of the reasons why we're reaching out to you, because no one would put virtual reality, I say no one, very few would put virtual reality in the same conversation or sentence as senior living. And we've had some talks about technology with a couple of other guests, and the conversation goes, it's slow to adopt this technology into the industry, but you're talking about virtual reality. I mean, how have you gotten to this point?
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, it's how do you build a workforce, right? So I think it was Argentum did the study that showed 1.2 million new staff by 2025 just in senior housing. But if you look beyond senior housing, there are a lot more folks caring for an aging population or providing services for an aging population. So, you know, without being a think tank, kind of the number that we got close to is about 5 million jobs by 2025. Mm. So how do we get younger generations interested? You know, senior living is a huge chunk of that. It's almost a third of it. But that's definitely not on their radars. I've been trying to get younger people interested in careers in aging for, well, I've been hiring millennials since I was 20 in the field of aging. So just so you guys know, I'm 29 and a half now, because you have to count half years when you're when you're working with centenarians and children. They're always counting in halves. So it's just been really interesting to find that it's not on anyone's radar, not because they're not, you know, possibly interested. It's just, it's not talked about by school counselors. It's not talked about by their professors. It's just so far off the radar. So that's why if you can use tech that's been dividing generations as a tool to bring them together and really target young people with the VR, because that can scale faster than, you know, 10,000 senior living professionals going into classrooms and speaking. That's doable, but that's going to take a while to get something like that off the ground. But media can really take things by storm. So that's, you know, that's kind of why the crazy tangential path, and it's not putting VR on older people. They're definitely welcome to watch, anyway, age is welcome to watch these videos, but it's definitely more targeting a young audience. Like, why should you care? Why are they fun? Like, why should you even consider talking to an older person or spending time with them yourselves, let alone a career in aging? So it's kind of building a funnel, and using the media at the top, and then you funnel into, oh, well, you enjoy spending time with elders. Would you want your first job to be in a senior living community? Would you be up for being, you know, working in wait staff, which is a job I had actually when I was younger? So I think there are a lot of ways to get young people in, and this is kind of a wild, crazy idea I had to follow.
And so is that the content of the virtual reality, is that you're physically, or you're saying, hey, this may be something that you're interested in. Come and take a walk down in a day in the life of a career in senior living. Is that the content of the virtual reality?
No, actually, no. It's mostly education and entertainment content for younger generations. So, you know, I was just in Puerto Rico. I spent some time in about 2 months in January in Puerto Rico. So you have a current event angle there, right? Because of the hurricane, you've got all sorts of different aspects. What we were doing there is I went swimming with a 99-year-old. In the ocean. So we were able to film that. And that's more of like an entertainment type of a story. But then a few other things we did is worked with artisans. So they taught us how to make a mortar and pestle, how to weave cattail chairs. So you take cattails and you weave them, and that's the part of the chair you sit on. And bobby lacing, which is something that actually came from, sorry, are you freezing? I think it might be my internet.
No, it froze. It's okay. So you were just finishing off with the cattail craft.
Yeah. So I went to also learn how to make bobby lace. So it's really interactive. So we're filming this again in both flat and in 360, so that whatever medium takes off, you know, we're ready for both. But it's more, that's more educational, right? So that's more like anthropology or sociology or art, or, you know, that's that history that can have many different education topics. And I think that's what's going to get teachers to share this content. And it just so happens that the maestros, that the elders are the experts are elders. So I think subconsciously we can connect young people to the value of elders. So then a career in the field of aging isn't something that's like, well, why would I ever do that? They already see value in elders beyond their grandparents. So it's just a different way to go about it.
Oh, okay. I think I get a much clearer picture now. Is that basically you're using the best technology available to create content around the topic to gain attention from the younger audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's super, yeah, super cool.
Thanks. And then we did some content specific to careers and aging and senior living. So that's already, you know, ready to go. And we could create more of that. We actually have a lot in the backlog, but it didn't take off like I think many of us who worked on the project thought it would. So it's there and it's accessible. But I think first, for people to even get to that layer of content and engagement, you first got to catch them with a bigger net, and then they'll filter through.
So tell me, and I know we probably touched on it a little bit in this initial conversation, but walk us back. Can you tell us much about this film tour? I've been fascinated by that. So you were basically in Europe, right, for like a whole month? Is that right? Because I knew I couldn't even hardly contact you for a month, and I didn't know if this was super secret, like top secret, or can you tell us about it?
No. So I was in Europe. There's a hashtag Euro Longevity Tour. But there are just a lot of things I wanted to see. I know they have a huge workforce shortage as well in the field of aging. The UK is really concerned about it. Germany as well. So they're a little bit ahead of it, ahead of the problem compared to the US. And I really do believe that the future of senior living isn't senior living. I think it's multi-generation communities with, you know, areas of the property where literally the community can come in and use that asset. So whether you have like a co-working space or you have a theater or whatever it is, it's somehow, I don't think baby boomers want to be isolated like they, you know, their parents were. So I think senior living won't be senior living in the future. So I wanted to go study multi-generation living over there.
Hey, so I so agree with you. And I think you know that you and I have talked about that a lot. And even when we were contemplating, what are we going to call this podcast? Yeah. You know, I think Lucas and I had a conversation about, we wanted to touch the senior living audience, but we were almost like, we don't want to call this anything senior living. Is this going to date this? Because how long is the term senior living even going to be a relevant term, right? And so I totally believe in that. So what would be some of the, I guess, big themes or big takeaways that you saw from that experience that you're like, ah, they get this. This is something that we could bring back to the States and not only implement this, but maybe even improve on what they're doing in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are some really creative people in the States that are doing this. So I'd definitely keep an eye on them. The university-based retirement communities are really great. The tricky part is, and I've consulted with a couple of universities, so this is from knowing the inside, very slow. So if university folks are listening, like, you guys got to speed it up. So, that's a really tricky part. I think Europe, you know, there's one I kept hearing about over and over again in the Netherlands called Humanitas. And so I went there, and, you know, they're the ones that probably get the most press of any of the intergenerational communities, probably in the world. And they have a lot of college students living on their campus. And what they do is, you know, they get free room and board basically for working at the community. And it just, I wasn't sure, you know, you go to these, go somewhere and you try to go with, I hope it's this, but you don't want to have your expectations up here and then you're there and it's a dud. But it was beyond anything I could have hoped for.
Oh, wow.
So the students were, and this is what I think we need to do in the US, the students were selling it. I mean, they were so passionate about their neighbors, and, you know, a lot of them didn't have like really close grandparents that even live close by or that they had close relationships to. And I thought that might be a little bit harder for them. And maybe it was in the beginning, but now some of those students are the closest to the elders in the community. So, you know, everyone needs human connection. And I think some things that, you know, in the US, some things I hear people are worried about, well, what if they party too much? And the kind of the response from the director at Humanitas, who's an amazing woman, is, you know, well, maybe the elders need to party a little bit too, or maybe they, you know, maybe they're reliving their glory days or whatever, right? It's good for them to be challenged a little bit. So that was something that, you know, that I think she got some pushback on that hasn't been an issue there. And a lot of the elders are very interested in the love, you know, the love lives of the younger residents. So, and vice versa. So it's a lot of fun. It's really, it does bridge the gap quite well. And some other things are, you know, the daycares in assisted livings or memory care, even. I think memory care is a place a lot of people in the U.S. are afraid to bring children into. And I think that creates a bigger problem and a faster downturn with the dementia. It's isolating, right? So that's another, those would be two things. Don't be afraid of kids being about parties or even going to them while they live in these communities. And don't be afraid of, you know, putting kids and people living with dementia together as well.
Yeah. So I think that maybe leads into some of my thinking. We kind of put this podcast under the topic of labor challenges, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you've kind of touched on some of the challenges and statistics that we're all in the industry hearing about. We're trying to figure out strategies to implement. Some of us feel like oftentimes we're drowning. And I think this group that you've mentioned, through Connect the Ages, the millennials, they seem to get like a bad rap, right? I mean, there's a bad reputation, I think, oftentimes among employers. Do you think that's fair?
You know, every person's different. There are bad boomer employees, there are bad millennial employees, and sorry, guys, there are bad Gen X employees. I think that's your category.
You nailed it. Yeah.
Right. And then there are great ones. So it just, you know, I think millennials are a pretty interesting group. You know, a lot of us, I started my first company, and it was a concierge service caring for elders in their homes during the recession. So it was really interesting to get the caliber of millennials, because I was based in Colorado and there's a big millennial migration to Colorado. The caliber of people that I had applying, it was just through the roof. I mean, I had nutrition grad students, nursing students, people trying to get into med school, teacher aides that were trying to get into teaching jobs. So just about everything, basically every soft and hard science you could think of, I was able to employ in the millennial category. So I think this is pretty typical of most senior living and most entry level jobs in the field of aging, is there are more female applicants than males. But as far as people I've employed and what I saw in the Netherlands, I think the young males maybe got more out of their relationship with the elders sometimes than, you know, female staff or the younger female students. And I don't know why that is exactly. I think maybe it's because none of them expected it, really. And it's really interesting. I don't know really how to explain it, but that's one thing that I've definitely noticed. So how do we get more males into these earlier roles is something that I think would be great for, you know, amazing leaders and role models like yourselves. Cause I think it takes, you know, people that they would want to be like when they grow up to kind of show them the way. So I think that's something you all could really tackle.
I think you might have just called us old guys. Did you just call us old guys? Yeah, I think you did.
Yeah. You're maestro.
Okay, perfect. Well, so tell me if you think this is true. This is just my own personal observation, no data to back this up. But as an employer, kind of all over the U.S., one of the things that seems to strike me about the millennial workforce, and again, stereotyping here, but is that, How do I say this? They seem extremely mission oriented. more than the older workforce. Like, right. It seems like the older workforce, they're very much about the job description, the career pathway, mm-hmm. you know, what are the benefits? And I don't get asked those questions very much by millennials. They really want to know more, like, what's the purpose? How is this impacting? How am I part of something bigger? How am I making a difference? And so for me, that's been something like a trend I'm seeing that seems really positive.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, you know, Lucas, if you're seeing that, Amanda, if you're seeing that, if you believe that, because I feel like if that is true, we have a real opportunity in senior living because of all of our touch points.
Huge.
And because it is, you know, so humane in nature. So just interested to know your perspective on that.
Mm-hmm. I think more generations are mission driven, but honestly, millennials had different content in school. So I had to take a class on corporate social responsibility, which, you know, people have different opinions on. But that's just, you know, education is different now. So how do you play to what they're learning? You know, a lot of millennials, you know, to even get into college, you have to have so many volunteer hours. To graduate high school, some high schools, you have to have volunteer hours. So I think that is just, you know, him being taught to them, and it they are rewarded for being mission driven. So however that came about, I do think they are mission driven. I agree. I do believe, however, that they, you know, they might not be as interested in a promotion, but they might be more interested in a cool job title. I mean, we can get a little creative. And then flexible time off seems to be another big thing for millennials. So that's huge. The other big piece is student loan debt. I mean, this millennials are ruining their credit, right? So then you have another big problem, because how can millennials buy the homes of baby boomers who senior living needs to move into their properties? These kids are completely destroying their credit with going into deferment or forbearance or just not paying back their loans. So that's another interesting perk that might be worth looking into, is student loan reimbursement as a senior living employer. That might be a nice benefit, that and flexible time off and a cool job title and mission driven work, and who knows.
Wow, that's going to get somebody's attention, and as an operator in this space, they need to be listening.
Oh yeah, no doubt. So obviously you have a growing and big following. I think people that are wanting to know what you're into, so many cool things. How can people follow your journey and what all you're involved in and be part of it?
Sure. I think, and maybe we could do the first one together too, but I was thinking of, you know, starting a regular like webinar or something to get people talking and connected about whatever's topical. So, but I think a big piece for me that I'm about is workforce and multi-generation living. So I'd love to do that with you guys. That's a piece. And then obviously social media, it's either Amanda Cavallari or Connect the Ages on just, I think, everything that I can think of, but I'm sure Generation Z has some secret apps I'm not invited to yet.
Well, awesome. Amanda, I mean, we really can't thank you enough for your time. I mean, our podcast is now international because of you.
Absolutely. You took us international in one episode. Yeah.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Amanda. We'll make sure that we put all this in our show notes. People can connect with you and engage with you. I think another part of our mission is that we don't want this podcast conversation to end when the audio's over. So we're going to take it to social media, and that way it allows people to ask questions and we'll make sure that we engage. So Amanda, safe travels. Believe me that we're going to be looking and following you because we want to know more and we want to continue to learn from you. So thank you so much.
See you, Amanda.
Bye. Thank you, Lucas and Josh.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye. You're listening to Bridge the Gap podcast, powered by Coastal Reconstruction.
So how fun is Amanda Cavallari?
She's one of my favorite people, actually. I love Amanda, have really enjoyed keeping up with her. Like I said, the first time I met her, her passion for what she does is incredible. And that right there is what it's going to take to positively change our industry. So she's definitely a catalyst for change.
Yeah.
Love what she's talking about, and love keeping up with her.
I mean, yeah, that's not something that you can fake. Like, that's just your DNA. Like, she, with the stuff that she's doing, it's just, I mean, it's another level is an understatement. To be literally challenging, traveling the globe in search of the best new model, the best new idea, a new culture, a new perspective, and a new take. I mean, that's not a crowded room. I mean, there's only a few. She's the only one I know.
Yeah. Well, and we've got to have a follow-up with her, because there's so many areas that we can do deep dives on. Today, we only had 20 minutes with her, and a 30-minute podcast flies by when you're with somebody like Amanda.
Right.
So there's so many implications on that. I think so much of what she's doing is some of the answers to our labor challenges.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about that in an earlier podcast. And I think that we can get her back on the show and hopefully dive in on that.
Yeah, I mean, her ideas around university school debt reimbursement. I mean, if you're trying to captivate an audience, where now we've talked to two people in the industry that throw out the $1.2 million for staff needed, and she said, you know what, when you take the whole healthcare system that encompasses a lot of the aging population, senior living, I mean, we really may be talking about 5 million workers.
Right.
You know, when we really look at it, that's a huge number.
Right. Well, and I think one of the things that she's doing is just giving some practical steps for how we as operators, as owners of communities, as administrators, can start to just take bites mm-hmm. of that apple and make a big difference.
Yeah.
So super excited about what Amanda's doing. Hope everybody will follow her journey.
Yeah, I think so. And probably the last big takeaway that I had that I know resonates with you, Josh, is the whole generational living and the fact that university systems are reaching out to her because she has their attention about the stuff that she's doing. I mean, what are you seeing there? I mean, how's that conversation going? And when do you think that is going to become more of a reality and then maybe the norm?
Well, so it's striking a nerve with a lot of people.
Sure.
And a lot of people are talking about it. When we launched Salinity, in the fall of last year of 2017, we started getting inundated with calls.
Okay.
From universities in particular, that obviously they're dealing with students mm-hmm. and wanting their career field, whatever their career field is, whatever they're training them in, they realize that the aging demographic, they're going to be going out into that demographic. Mm-hmm. And they recognize the value that their students are going to have on the change for the future, as well as they recognize the value of their alumni mm-hmm. that have gone on before these millennials. And both of these, you know, I think there's a real opportunity for the intergenerational space. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to bridge the gap, as we talk about here so often. That's what we're about. So intergenerational, multi-generational is a term that Amanda used.
Yeah.
So, I think that's very relevant. I think everybody's wondering right now, how? Mm-hmm. How do we do that? And there's not so much a cookie cutter, but what I love about what Amanda is doing is she is traveling the globe and bringing back resources so that we can see some of the good that is taking place. So super excited about that and hope to have her back on the show soon.
We definitely will. Well, I think this rounds out an amazing episode with Amanda, and I know that it's really going to benefit and give a lot of value back to our listeners. And so you better believe we're going to be pumping this out onto our social channels, and we'll have it all in the show notes. And again, our mission here is not to just put out some content and then say the end. Our mission here is to create real conversations and real engagement with people. And so we're available to do that. And so we'll be posting up very, very shortly. Please go online, check us out, and we will see you there.